The 60th anniversary of the Declaration of Principles, a commemoration, concluded. Reflections on its significance 60 years later. A feature article by Professor David Inglesma. The significance of the Declaration of Principles of the Protestant Reformed Churches concerning the covenant of grace is great, greater even than its author and defenders in the early 1950s could have imagined. The full significance of the Declaration becomes apparent only today in light of the astounding doctrinal developments in almost all the conservative Reformed and Presbyterian churches in North America. Obviously, the significance of the Declaration is that it settled the controversy over the covenant in the Protestant Reformed churches. That controversy, deliberately begun, I repeat, by those who intended to introduce the conditional covenant into the PRC, was dividing and thus destroying the denomination. It is not true that the Declaration caused the schism in the PRC. Already before the Declaration was decisively adopted, a Protestant Reformed consistory in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, zealous for the conditional covenant, disciplined a Protestant Reformed minister for preaching the unconditional covenant. The Declaration rather brought the existing, deep doctrinal division in the denomination to light and settled the conflict. In adopting the Declaration, the Synod of 1951 did what synods are required to do: settle doctrinal disputes clearly and decisively, that is, without hedging, compromising, or obfuscating. Thus, the adoption of the Declaration restored peace to the churches. The effect of the adoption of the Declaration was that those contending for a conditional covenant, and they were contending for it, left the denomination in 1953. At once they declared the decision of the Synod adopting the Declaration null and void in their fellowship. Within a few years, in 1961, they returned to the Christian Reformed Church, where their covenant theology and they were at home. The remnant again enjoyed unity in a cardinal truth of the Reformed faith, that is, the doctrine of the covenant of sovereign, particular grace. Second, the Declaration functions in the PRC according to its original purpose. This purpose, the preamble of the document states, is that the Declaration be used only by the Mission Committee and the missionaries for the organization of prospective churches. The Declaration is not the basis of the organization of new churches. The Reformed creeds are the basis. The Declaration is a necessary instrument to prepare groups for organization and to determine whether a group may be organized as a congregation in the denomination. Groups with whom the PRC are working in missions must know and be in full agreement with the doctrine of the covenant, the principles of which are spelled out in the Declaration. The missionary must instruct the group in this truth, using the Declaration. He may not merely wave the Declaration before the group a few days before organization. At the Synod of 1953, which treated protests against the Declaration, Herman Hooksma said this about the necessity of the Declaration in missions. The Declaration was absolutely necessary in order to prevent the liberated from streaming into our communion of churches and corrupting it with their doctrinal errors regarding the promise and the covenant and related matters. Implied in that original purpose is that the Declaration be used in all our ecumenical work, in all contact with other churches. Ecumenicity aims at relationships, culminating in that of sister churches. In relationships, each ecclesiastical body influences the other, ultimately by the opening of pulpits to the ministers of the other body, and by the opening of the table to the members of the other body. Adoption of the Declaration to prevent the influx of members maintaining a conditional covenant, and, thus, the introduction of the doctrine of the conditional covenant into the PRC, implies that the PRC may establish no ecumenical relationship apart from knowledgeable, genuine oneness in the doctrine of the covenant outlined in the Declaration. Third, the declaration is binding upon all members of the PRC. The declaration is a synodical decision, indeed an especially important synodical decision, as both the history of its adoption and the contents of the decision demonstrate. Synodical decisions in a Reformed denomination of churches are settled and binding according to Article 31 of the Church Order of Dort. No member of the PRC may challenge, or even question, the principles of the covenant affirmed by the declaration, that is, apart from an overture to synod. No one may plead for reconsideration of the issue, unconditional versus conditional covenant. To do so would be schismatic. Fourth, even though it is no creed, the declaration can serve, and ought to serve, as an important witness to the beliefs of the PRC concerning the creedal doctrine of the covenant of grace. Contending for the decisive adoption of the declaration at the Synod of 1951, Hoeksma wrote, "We must clearly express what, according to the conviction of the PRC, is in the plain teaching of the confessions concerning the covenant, in distinction from the liberated view of the covenant and of the promise of God." Fifth, the declaration stands the PRC in good stead today, and is a beacon of light to the Reformed community of churches with regard to the covenant heresy that calls itself the Federal Vision. By its own self-description, the Federal Vision, which is now troubling virtually all the conservative Reformed and Presbyterian churches in North America, is the development of the covenant doctrine of Klaus Schilder, Ben Howarda, Cornelius Veenhoff, and the Reformed churches in the Netherlands. The Federal Vision is the development of the covenant doctrine that the PRC rejected in the Declaration of Principles in 1951. The Federal Vision is the necessary, inevitable, natural development of the doctrine of a conditional covenant into a covenant theology that denies justification by faith alone and, with this cardinal truth of the gospel, all the doctrines of grace that are confessed by the canons of Dort. For the doctrine of a conditional covenant is, as Hoeksma charged, Arminianism in the covenant. At bottom, the doctrine of a conditional covenant is the fundamental false doctrine against which the Church has always had to contend, from Jesus' personal struggle with the Pharisees and Paul's conflict with the Judaizers to Dort's battle against the Remonstrants. In salvation, God depends on the sinner. In the doctrine of a conditional covenant, as fully developed by the Federal Vision, God depends upon the baptized, infant sinner for covenant salvation. In the aftermath of the schism of 1953, when not only the schismatics themselves, but also the watching Reformed church world cursed the PRC for contending uncompromisingly for the unconditional covenant, Hoeksma prophesied that history would justify the PRC regarding their confession of the unconditional covenant and their condemnation of a conditional covenant. By the heresy of the Federal Vision, God has fulfilled Hoeksma's prophecy, justifying in history the adoption of the declaration by the PRC. God has done more. By the adoption of the declaration, God preserved the PRC in the truth of the gospel of sovereign grace, which Dort confessed, as this truth applies to the covenant. Even more importantly, God preserved his truth in the PRC. He preserved his truth in the PRC so that in the present hour of crisis regarding sovereign grace in the covenant, the members of the PRC, believers and their children, would be protected from the soul-destroying heresy of the Federal Vision. His purpose was also that the PRC witness to the truth of the covenant to the confused, troubled, and erring Reformed and Presbyterian churches. The significance of the declaration is also its warning to the PRC, especially to the office bearers. This is a warning against an unsound zeal for ecumenicity and an unhealthy emphasis on missions. I desire not to be misunderstood. I dislike being misrepresented. The warning is not against zeal for ecumenicity or against emphasis on missions. but against unsound zeal and unhealthy emphasis. The declaration became necessary because of division and controversy in the PRC over the doctrine of the covenant. The PRC foolishly brought this division and controversy upon themselves. Upon Herman Hoeksma falls the greatest blame for this foolishness. Under Hoeksma's leadership, the PRC opened themselves to the Skilders and the Liberated Church's doctrine of the covenant. The Synod of the PRC invited Skilder to speak at office-bearers' conferences and to preach throughout the denomination. In the Standard-Bearer, Hoeksma declared to all the readership, that is, to virtually the entire membership of the PRC, after conferences on the doctrine of the covenant, that Skilder and the PRC were one in the fundamentals of the Reformed faith, and disagreed only in incidentals. We agreed upon fundamentals, and for the rest we agreed to differ. This was false. The difference regarding the covenant was and is fundamental. Within a year it would be the heroic task of Hoeksma to convince the PRC of this fundamental difference. The equivalent in that day of our contact committee sent a letter to the RCN Liberated in 1948 expressing that both denominations stand on the foundation of the three forms of unity and that any doctrinal differences there might be between the two denominations are no confessional differences. This letter went out over the signatures of Herman Hoeksma, George Uphoff, and John DeYoung. The letter displayed an unseemly eagerness for growth from the liberated immigrants in Canada and for ecumenical relations with the RCN Liberated. The letter was public. Reading again the Acts of Synod and editorials in the Standard Bearer of 1947 and 1948, in the knowledge of the history of warfare and schism that would follow, I groaned in spirit. Hoeksma, what are you saying? What are you doing? Us was personal friendships, desire for growth, zeal for ecumenicity, and emphasis on missions. Unsound zeal for ecumenicity and unhealthy emphasis on missions. Doctrinal differences were minimized or ignored or even denied. The zeal and emphasis were not in the truth and on the basis of the truth. Ecumenicity and missions may not be pursued at the expense of the truth. Doctrinal differences may not be ignored. All ecumenicity and missions, important callings of the Church, must proceed deliberately, cautiously, and surely on the basis of oneness in the truth. To describe happenings in the history of the Church, like that of the schism in the PRC in the late 1940s and early 1950s, theologians use a Latin phrase which means the providence of God and the confusion of men. Among us was confusion. In and over that confusion was the providence of God. In spite of the confusion of men, God directed the entire history for good. The good of the PRC, the good of Reformed Christianity, and the good of the preservation and development of His truth and gospel. Indeed, by means of the confusion of men, God accomplished His glorious end, the confession of sovereign grace in the covenant, in the declaration of principles.